Namaste everyone, welcome to this Jarvik podcast. This is your host Kushal Mehra. So last time Daniel was on the podcast, it was 5 months ago, where we had that discussion on anti-Semitism in the West in general. I want to state this on record. Daniel had made certain predictions on that podcast, and he had said this virus will spread in different ways. Right now they're protesting on the streets, and I remember Daniel insinuating or directly stating, I don't remember his exact words, that this is going to go to the next stage, that is the universities. So, and it hurts me to say Daniel was right in this case, because I was hoping he was wrong in this case, because it's not something good. So as I saw it all unfolding in the universities, I reached out to Daniel. I wish I could talk to Daniel about his lovely dates that he goes to. Every time I message Daniel, there's a standard pattern, ladies and gentlemen. If Daniel Boardman does not reply to my DMs in 2-3 hours, I know he's on a date. Otherwise, I get a reply in 5 minutes.
Well, we make it seem like my love life is much more functional than it is. But if that's the Zionist propaganda we're putting out there today, then I'm all for it. That's a thing. Yeah, unfortunately, I know the Muslim Brotherhood and the communist organizations and groups in this country way too well to be wrong about them. It'd be nice if I was ever wrong about a jihad, but. I tend to have a good record on these things, unfortunately.
Yeah, so let's start here, Dan. First, we steelman the entire scenario. Let's assume that the people of India are not aware of what started from Colombia and now has pretty much gone to major universities across the Western world, whether it's the United Kingdom, whether it's Australia. I mean, what the hell? What have Aussies got to do with this? But apparently even there.
So what I'd say for, and I think this applies, I think some Indians are guilty of this too, because you're humans on the planet. Now, you have to understand, a lot of this is around American foreign policy and people outside of America thinking American foreign policy is their country's foreign policy. So that's a big element to it. I know I'm supposed to steel man this, but it's important to bring up a point. So, okay, if you want to say the Americans, this started in Columbia University, and as you, the Ivy League schools are the worst. They have the most what you would call wokeness. They also have the highest connections to – I mean, they get the most funding from Qatar and Saudi Arabia, Iran. It makes sense because the bad actors like, you know, Qatar, Muslim Brotherhood, who would – if you're going to corrupt a school and focus your energy on corrupting a school, you would pick Harvard, Cornell, McGill, like the Ivy League ones, the big ones. No point in going to Old Miss University first. You can get there later, but you could see some priority infiltration in these things. So in Columbia, they took over the campus for Palestine. And they want full boycott, divestment, sanctions. So in the most reasonable university occupations, they've sort of morphed over the last month. The leaders have sort of decided to, because they were such clowns and asking for ridiculous things off the bat, that they've decided, once they've been mocked, their new position is basically divestment from Israel. They want the universities to have no partnerships with Israel. They want university funds to invest no money in companies that have any assets in Israel. They want no consequences for their actions, basically. Those are the three things. Generally, you see them want complete immunity for all the protesters. So they want them to say, okay, we were allowed to break the law. Fine. Okay, that's the demand, fine. Divest from Israel. So no money into companies or whatever that fund Israel. Now, this one, kind of impossible to do in the modern world. Like, you cannot divest from companies that have interests in Brazil. These companies are multinational. And like, what if some company has a list of people in there's an office in Israel, or one of their employees is in Israel, like what do we, or they buy it's stupid. Like, it can't be done. They want to disclose. They want to disclose and divest. So they want the university to release their entire financial statements to the mob. Or to them, let's say, and they want to go through and like say, you can invest here, you can't, yes, yes, no. That's that. Now, you've brought up this list of demands.
This is Rutgers. This is Rutgers.
This is the Rutgers thing. Now, this is SJP-backed Rutgers. This is more like what they actually want. this is more what it's generally about, because this is SJP created, and SJP is Students for Justice in Palestine. They're an arm of American Muslims for Palestine, which is a Muslim Brotherhood front group that was connected to terror funding. It was an unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land Foundation trial in the U.S. So in the Holy Land Foundation trial, there's this Holy Land charity that was funding Hamas, and they busted basically the entire network of American Muslim Brotherhood terrorist networks, and a bunch of Muslim Brotherhood organizations were named as unindicted co-conspirators, which basically means the judge says, we all know they're guilty, but we're not going to start a new investigation into proving it. So it just like lower, so they don't have to get defense lawyers. Like they're just kind of declared guilty, but not like don't suffer for being guilty. It's just, okay, the evidence says, okay, this is an unindicted co-conspirator. So fast forward to, I don't know, 20 plus years, and this is their list of demands. I can't read this whole thing, but there's one of these things. This is the one where they want, cultural boycott of Israel too, where they don't even want Hillels on campuses. This was, I'm not sure if that was Rutgers, but one of them, Hillel is like an international thing. There's two like Jewish organizations that are sort of all over the world, cultural institutions. One is Chabad, mm-hmm. and Chabads are like, really religious Jews. And anywhere you go, if there's like a Jewish event, they're like, they want Jews to put on tefillin or whatever, but they're just set up. If you go to any country as a Jew, you can find the Chabad. And as like a Friday night dinner, you can go there for a Shabbat dinner. And if you're new to the country, they'll be like, they'll connect you. And like, if you're a single man or woman, they'll try and, get you married. Like that's what they do. And Hillel is sort of a Jewish, it's an international, provides Jewish life for students on campus. So they'll run Shabbat dinners on campuses, on Passover, on Purim, on Hanukkah. Hillel will have the party. It's sort of like, Hillel's a very middle of the road organization politically. Like they're run, it's a university and it's Jews. So there's too scared to do anything. It's not like Hillel's out there being like, we support Likud and we want, victory until death. Like Hillel organizes things like, let's have LGBTQ bagel night to show how, progressive we are. Like that's Hillel. So it's not like Hillel's this like hardcore political organization. It's only real function is to throw Jewish events for Jewish students on campuses. But these people want it banned as well, because Hillel won't come and join the encampment and declare, Israel is an illegitimate blah, 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 blah. So you have these demands, and like, I'm going to do another thing. Like in Canada, I'm going to go back to American foreign policy. In Canada, mm-hmm. one of the big things, and you see it, especially here in Toronto. I mean, there's just a banner put up by them. They had a whole fancy thing where KKK Canada, KKK Canada, stop arming Israel genocide.
So, oh yeah, I remember you had put that one up, right?
Yeah. Well, Karima found it first, but I had retweeted. We had instigated that. Let's say, I mean, this is from Gada Sassa, who's one of the like lifetime Palestinian activists. She's getting a PhD at McMaster University. She was where SJMP was a student, Justin Millies or CPMP, one of the big Palestinian activist groups. Yeah, this one. She used to head it. She lost her job after October 7th because she was like outright celebrating October 7th and like very publicly, like, great thing, keep going, we love this, they all deserve it. Like very vocally in support of October 7th.
I have a question for you. So what they're insinuating here for KKK Canada is the Ku Klux Klan of Canada.
Yeah.
What they're saying is that Canada is white nationalist. Why do these people want to come to Canada then? I have a very honest question. If you don't like it, don't go there, right?
Well, they're revolutionaries. They want something to destroy. So she claimed, like, one of our MPP said, deport this woman. And I'm fully on, like, I'm all about deporting terrorists. And she came back with a thing saying, like, this is, these fascists want me gone. I like to say, one, I'm a settler on this land. So she, by her own thing, settlers can all be killed by her logic. But she says, I'm a settler that stands with basically the indigenous resistance and land back movement. So she's like, yes, I'm a settler, but I want all of Canada. Like, she believes that indigenous people, or at least says, I don't think she really cares. I think she really just wants dead Jews. But she, to her own claims, she thinks that indigenous people can do an October 7th here in Canada and are completely warranted. I'm just going to say, like, quit arming genocide. People don't realize. So America gives Israel arms. And the aid America gives Israel is different than other countries. It's not like Jordan, where they just give them $1 billion. If America gives Israel $1 billion for military aid, Israel spends that money and has to spend that money on American defense contractors. So it's not like the money's like leaving America, really. They're kind of just like giving it to Israel to fund their own military. So it's not like a pure gift. But people don't think that. And people think because America arms Israel, every Western country is doing that. So they thought that Canada was sending arms to Israel. Now, Canada does kind of send arms to Israel, but Canada doesn't even send arms to the Canadian Army. So it's not like we have, you know, we're not keeping the war effort up. Israel actually gives more military aid to Canada than Canada gives to Israel. It's not a lot. It's like we would give them like, I don't know, it was like $13 million to $20 million a year in military aid, and they would give us like $20 to $30 million in military aid. Like,
if only they could spend that money on Justin Trudeau's plane when they landed in Canada.
you could. So, like, well, listen, I'm not, you know, $18 million is a lot of money to you, like, or to me. It's not a lot of money when we talk about countries and policies. It like, okay, so we stopped that. Trudeau capitulated. We don't do that anymore. Trudeau withdrew that. He gave into the mob months ago, but we're still pretending that we're arming Israel, even though Trudeau capitulated to this. So even when they get what they want, they got more radical. After they got what they wanted, they started blockading. They went from just marching around the streets. Then they went to go and blockade like railroads and infrastructure. That was after they got what they wanted. So I say, don't appease them. Don't negotiate with them. Don't give them what they want. It won't make them go away. It will make them come back stronger. And they learn to push you over. Plus, I don't think any of their demands are morally reasonable.
We want disclosement and divestment of Israel things. We want the numbers so we can go through and decide where everyone on campus is either Zionist or not Zionist enough. And then, like, come on. Like, you can't give the mob anything. But we are run by weak leadership.
So since when did playing a Canadian national anthem become a problem in Canada, Daniel? Can I play that clip that you shared?
Yeah.
If you don't mind. So explain the context of this clip first before I play this. What exactly was happening here before I play this clip?
Okay, so this is at the U of T encampment. So we went down there late at night to give them a bit of a wake up, and they were kind of being a bit rowdy there. Like, they weren't fully asleep. I'll admit that. Like, they were kind of playing their own. Like, they were pretending to be indigenous for a while. They had like some indigenous music playing. Like, whoa! I'm like, fine. So then we kind of came up, and you see in this, like, we just decided to start playing "O Canada" really loud because we know they hate Canada. And it's the national anthem. So we're like, okay, we'll play "O Canada." And also, like, my idea is to play "O Canada" to be a bit clever and like win it. Like, I kind of knew what would happen if we played "O Canada." Like, it worked out better than my wildest dreams. Like, so the police came down and like told us to shut it off. But then we said no, because there's no, listen, it's Canada. No one's in charge of the country. There are no rules. Anyone can do whatever they want. Like, it's martial. It's the Wild West here. So no one has any issue with that. But you saw them, like, this is where the KKK Canada stuff came, is because we woke them up with the Canadian national anthem a couple nights ago. They did exactly what we thought they would do. Is everything we do, they claim is like genocidal. So if we were like, we play the Canadian national anthem, be like, oh, they are assaulting us with the Canadian national anthem. Like, right. You saw, like, when she started eating bananas, they were like, oh, bananas are indicative of murder. And you're like, all right, whatever. So we were playing the Canadian national anthem. The jihadi started to stir and like flash strobe lights and like get all, you know, buzz around the outsides of the fences there. And then the police came up and like wanted to stop it. And then Amir, who runs Tough Seeks, just said, no, we're not stopping it. And then we went on to serenade them with some Canadian music. And then there were a bunch of Jewish students there who came up to us, and they had just been harassed and assaulted by the mob. We didn't know that beforehand, but there are some students there, and they were walking around, but you know, they had like Magen Davids on and Jewish necklaces, and like the mob was harassing them and the police were not protecting them, but saying like, oh, you know, taking the line that like, well, you knew what was here. Or like, why do you want to get assaulted if you're being Jewish and you're them? Why are you doing that? That's a general police response. So this kind of sets the tone of what's going on.
So let's play this now. So this is such a... See, a couple of cops are approaching a car that's playing "Oh Canada" really loud. It's so poetic. Les has clearly lost his mind. This is so good.
They were blasting for 2 hours straight. We all heard it. No, they've been blasting music for the last 2 hours, these guys. Do you not hear that? They've been blasting music for the last 2 hours. We haven't said nothing.
They haven't been blasting.
Over there.
I'm about to shit off until you...
They have right there for the last 2 hours.
Oh, this was so good. I loved it. The best bit was, I'm not turning shit off.
Yeah. He's like, again, this is what people, I mean, I've experienced this the entire, you know, last 6 months. And the police generally don't, I mean, all the new policing, we could say woke policing strategies, depolicing, whatever you want to call it. We have this sense where it's now, the police have this idea where they don't want to do anything about the mob. That's dangerous and whatever. But the people who are law-abiding citizens who are protesting the lawbreakers, they're easier to move because they'll obey the law. So like we had this when there was a peaceful gathering at Queen's Park, our Ontario legislature, on Cyrus the Great Day. It was Jews and Iranians celebrating Cyrus the Great, not even a protest against anything, booked the spot, whatever. But then 4,000 illegal Palestinian marchers were coming down onto Queen's Park. So instead of stopping them from coming to Queen's Park, the police came in force to try and intimidate the Jews off of the legislature and say, well, if anything happens, it's on you. We can't protect your safety. I'm like, yes, you can. Like, that's the thing. But we were lucky that they tried to do that. And there were like actual MPPs and MPs there. They couldn't do it because once like the MPP, Goldie Gamari, like went into Queen's Park where she works. He was like, I'm an MP, grabbed a giant Lion and Sun Imperial Iranian flag and was like, no, we're not leaving. Then the police had to call other cops and like actually, okay, do their job. But not every gathering is run by me and Solomon and as Goldie. Most gatherings have, you know, 70, 80 year old Jewish women who, when the cops came up and say, no, you have to go away. It's the Intifada's coming here now. Go now. They can't say no to a cop with a stern voice. And they're more law abiding citizens. Like, so that's the new thing, is enforce the law on law abiding citizens, to clear the path for the Intifada. Because if the Intifada sees Jews, they'll get violent and attack. And that's your fault for being attacked. And that's kind of what the cops believe. And it's a real big problem for the country. But as you see here, like there are now people, and now the Jews are just like, yeah, if you're not going to enforce the law on them, you're not enforcing the law on me. And like, so the social contract kind of just broken down. There's no function into the police. The police don't do anything. So just no one really respects the police is the safest thing to be, because the police aren't going to keep you safe from the mob. And if you keep appeasing the mob's going to become the police. If someone doesn't stand up to the mob, it will continue to grow. And we see that it's spreading. You know, they're at universities now. When the semesters go over, they'll start blockading and attacking critical infrastructure. That's like, they'll go back to that. They'll figure that out right away. I mean, their leaders are hardened insurrectionist terrorists, like from SJP and the Muslim, like, and you see like these, the encampment in Toronto couldn't start initially. They tried to get one off the bed and rise, but it couldn't start because it had no sort of funding and professional activists. All that funding and professional activists were in Quebec at the time at Concordia Hill. Now that the U of T thing is able to start up, a lot of the professional activists and from McGill have come back to Toronto. And in my video yesterday, like I interact with three of them. We're like, there's one who's, I kind of went there to cover it. And one guy decided to like sort of
stand near me and just sing around. And
yeah, he was singing. I mean, his singing was not that bad. I saw that.
His singing was not bad. But there was other people I showed, like the Jabbar, what's his face? The guy who he kind of went viral on Al-Quds Day for having like the smoke canisters on his chest. And someone, my friend's like, this looks like a mock suicide vest. And I was like, that's not a mock suicide vest. That's racist. That's not a mock suicide vest. That is live ammunition. It's not fake ammunition. Those are real smoke grenades. He has the intent of setting off in the middle of the street. It's like, oh, that's much better. But he's also, interestingly, the guy on film in Toronto. When there's announcement, they announce, just everyone, just announcing, the Islamic Republic of Iran has decided to launch, has launched hundreds of missiles and drones at the state of Israel or at the Zionist entity. And everyone starts cheering. He's cheering and beating a drum. Now, he's that, but on top of him is a kid with a sweatshirt of Abu Ahmed, the Hamas spokesperson, on it. And then he's cheering the Iranian attack on Israel. And then they're all cheering, and they go, what do you think? And then he gives a takbir, and Allahu Akbar, takbir, Allahu Akbar. That was his response to the Islamic Republic of Iran firing missiles at Israel, was guy with Hamas sweater on his shoulders, beating the drum, cheering, and doing an Allahu Akbar. So that's him. And the other person I kind of tried to sing out there was Nawid Awan from Pal-e-Sign, this Instagram page. His brother was already arrested a month ago. So he was on the microphone. He has a criminal record, we found out, but he was on the microphone harassing Jews, basically at the 100 days or the 6 months hostage rally. He was leading the counter protests, and he was saying things like, you know, Hitler was right, we need more Hitlers, whatever. Kids, look at your parents, ask them about Christ, if prophet killers. You're like this, like real vile pro-Hitler anti-Semitic harassment and all that. They looked into him. So that was his brother. And Nawid has arranged all these protests, and he's come with signs like glory to the martyrs, glory to the resistance, inverted triangle. He's a Hamas supporter. And he led the sort of the takeover of the bridge. Like starting the bridge, like the bridge in the Jewish neighborhood. He was leading the intifada to sort of intimidate the Jews. So these are the people who are in positions of leadership at the U of T student encampment. And most of these people aren't students. And this is, again, with the university. Like, I understand if it was just students, but like, have some balls as a university and be like, I'm sorry, Fred Hahn, who is the leader of Koopy Union, who is like under investigation by his own thing. Like, why is the head of a union in here, like part of this encampment? Like, he's not a student. Like, get these non-students. Like, I understand if it's like, if these are students, fine. But like, enforce some sort of like trespass on the non-students, and clean it up in that way. But you know, everyone's too afraid to do something. Every university is afraid of the media, because unlike the convoy, this has favorable media coverage. This is a violent protest that the media is trying to pretend is peaceful, whereas the convoy is a peaceful protest the media tried to pretend is violent. So because of that, no administrator wants to do anything. They don't want to be the first ones in Canada. No one wants to be the first one in Canada to clear this out. That's the problem.
And where was this picture taken?
U of T as well.
Basically, so leave Palestine alone and go back to Europe. So if I was to change this.
Yeah. Long live the resistance is right beside it. Yeah.
Yeah. So if I was to change this and put this in U of T, leave Lahore alone and go back to Persia or Arab lands. Would they allow that in UFT as an Indian, as a Hindu?
They'd bring back capital punishment. They would drag you to the middle of the university, but just put a bullet in the back of your head, and everyone would be like, oh, yes, okay, you deserve that.
So just like the Rutgers demands, it was either 8 or 9 was we should be allowing Palestinian flags, Kashmiri flags, but no Balochistan was mentioned, interestingly. No Balochistan was mentioned.
Interesting, but not surprising.
Yeah. So listen, this protest, what do these idiots, what do they want? Like, where are the Jewish people of Canada and America going to go? Like, what do they want? I was seeing videos. I don't know. It's so hard to, verify every single video and every single clip, right? But I saw a Jewish professor crying and saying that they're not letting me in. I'm a Jew and they don't let me in. Like, are these things real? Like, they're not allowing a person to enter just because they're Jewish?
They would say that, no, we have Jews here. So there are anti-Jewish Jews, right? There are radical communist Jews. Like, I've seen these people. Like, they're professional agitators, far-left protesters, and they're anti-Israel, and they're allowed in. And it makes sense because they've learned that, oh, they're going to call us anti-Semitic, so let's get our token Jews here. None of them really know anything about Judaism. They're all radical leftists. It's like, oh, see, Canada's a bad place. Why? I found Canadians who hate Canada. There's a Canadian who says Canada's bad, therefore Canada is bad. And I'm not anti-Canadian. It's like, okay, what are we doing? But they use these Jews, and they use the Jews in U of T. They'll get the Jews to put up signs that say, Jews support armed resistance. Jews support armed resistance by any means necessary. So they get these token Jews to say, you know what? We're pro-Hamas. We're not a pro-Hamas. It's the Jews who are pro-Hamas. Like, it's sick and evil. But if you're Jewish, like, I was denied access into the encampment. A random professor was denied access. Like, if you're Jewish and you're a hardcore anti-Israel, radical communist, you probably know you're friends with these people. So you can get pre-screening and you can come in. They'd be like, oh yeah, this guy's cool because, you know, he wants, whatever. He's a communist. So they can get in. But if it's like you're just Jewish, you can't get in to this encampment because the U of T one's a bit different because I have friends who think this was deliberate. But U of T had fenced off this area before the encampment. They had fenced off this area for convocation or for graduation. They had fenced off the King's Circle and like, no one go in it. We want to prepare it for graduation. And I'm not sure if it was just really stupid of them or actively they had Palestinians inside the administration who did that. Because then it just provided the fences for them. Like, all they had to do was open up one part of the fence and then boom, we have an encampment. Like, we're closed off. And then the students control there was one checkpoint. They've made more checkpoints since a couple of days ago. Like, I was there yesterday. Like, a couple of days ago, there was only one checkpoint and entrance into the thing. Now there's three. So they're moving around the fences. But this fencing was provided to them by the university, foolishly enough. And now they have a camp. Like, the university can't, there's so many things the university could do. They could just say, okay, we're taking the fencing away. Like, we put up the fencing, we're just taking the fencing away. So you can't have little fencing to do your messages. Like, sorry, we're taking the fencing. Like, you don't get to create a little city. Like, this is dangerous. Like, if you want to be on the lawn in camp, like, we're taking away your fencing so you're not, they could be like, oh, you're not, it makes it more dangerous to the outside world. But eventually you're gonna have to clear this thing, guys. I think the administrators are really under the impression that this will end when the school year ends. I think they really think that when the school year is over, everyone will just go home and then they'll go somewhere else and they won't have to deal with this. I truly think that's the impression of all these universities, is they think they can kind of wait this thing out and it will just go away. Spoiler alert, it doesn't. I could be wrong. And there's a situation that all the leading academics and intellectuals in the West are right about something and I'm wrong about something. That could happen. But I don't think so.
I came across this article. I don't know the person. So it was written by Jonathan Lederer. At Columbia, I am told, go back to Poland. My Israeli flag was stolen and burnt. I was hit. And the school is preventing the NYPD from protecting us. This is some seriously disturbing things that I read in this report on the Free Press. And I don't know what to say. Like, what is going on in this? They chanted, fuck Israel, Israel's a bitch. We were told, you guys are all inbred. They threw water in our faces. These groups are not fairly described as pro-Palestine. They're active supporters of Hamas, and they say so explicitly, quote, We say justice, just say how. Burn Tel Aviv to the ground, one group chanted. By the gates of my school, Hamas, we love you. We support your rockets too. One Kefia mass protester came up to my friends and I and held up a sign with an arrow pointing towards us that read, Al-Qassam's next targets. Al-Qassam is the military wing of Hamas. Just after midnight, the protesters began chasing us toward the campus gates. We felt we had to leave for our own safety. In order to exit, we had to use the gates on the corner of Amsterdam Avenue and 116th Street. All of the entrances and exits were closed in rock. I mean, this is so disturbing. Like,
yeah, I mean, this is indicative because it's Columbia, New York. And I see this as... So Columbia is like a private institution. They can decide whether or not to bring cops onto the campus or not. Like, that was the whole thing. Like, they finally said yes to the cops being on campus, and they have to clear them out. So Columbia wants to keep the cops off campus as much as possible because they know that their students are committing tons of criminal activities, and if the cops come onto campus, they have to do something about it. So they don't want to do anything about it because they just don't want the bad press for a night. So they've ceded then authority of the campus to the Hamas mob. That makes it unsafe for Jews. But in order to admit that it's unsafe for Jews and they made it unsafe for Jews, they have to acknowledge a couple of things as university administrators. One, that the people, the students in the encampment aren't the good guys. They actually are pro-Hamas. And two, the administrators themselves, have failed and been malicious towards the Jewish community and disregarded their safety in their ignorance because they do not want to make that admission and they don't want to think about themselves because they're good people. Remember, they're smart. Trump is bad. They are good. If Trump gets in, it's a really bad thing because they are so smart and they are so good and they are so moral and they spend 4 years morally catastrophizing over the other side that they must be the good guys. But they're not acting like the good guys. So in order to make this true, they then have to justify that, oh, these, you know, Zionist agitators are really agitating and it's their fault and they're exposing. If they wouldn't be so rowdy, if the Jews just didn't try and get on campus, we wouldn't have problems because then we could have the Hamas people roaming around and there'd be no problems if there just was no Jews to harass. So this is why the university administrator is so hostile towards the Jews, is because they enable hostility towards the Jews. They think of themselves as good people. And if they want to maintain their image as good people, they have to make the Jews the bad guys. So that's what they do. Instead of having any sort of self-reflection, they just will make – and then the mob gets out of control. They occupy a Hamilton Hall and like break windows, smash. And, oh, look, you move the Jews off campus. You sided with the mob. You demonize the Jews. You put the Jews in danger. And then how did the mob repay you? Oh, they declared you're all Nazis and they took over their own Hamilton Hall. And
this image that I've put up here states that flags bearing the logos of the U.S. designated terror groups Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, PFLP, and Hezbollah are seen at the encampment protests at the California State Polytechnic University, Humboldt left, and the Princeton University on the right. How can anybody justify this? Like, what is the justification for this? It makes no sense.
They're idiots. Like, a lot of the students are really, really dumb. We're pretending like there's a couple things I don't like about these narratives. One, we're pretending the students are smart and they're not. The universities have collapsed. If they're getting engineering degrees, that's a real degree. But no one in poli science, no one in English literature, no one in sociology is getting a real degree. These aren't real. These are pieces of paper and they're not real and you're not smart. If you're in poli sci, I don't respect your opinion about politics. If you're in sociology isn't real, gender studies isn't real. Any of these things, they aren't real. So you have students who have been taught ideology and don't really know things. And listen, they're young. So they see an encampment and they just want to go in. Now, this is where people start to say, well, they're just kids and they're young and they're just having fun. It's like, no. I've met they're a mix of either radical communists, violent ethno-nationalists, or outright neo-Nazis or Islamists. Like, they're either Islamists, ethno-nationalists, or communists, or some combination of the three. And you don't just get to be like, oh, that's cute. You know, my 19-year-old's a hardcore like, no. If your 19-year-old kid comes home from university one day, dressed with an SS armband, mustache, and Goose steps into home and is like, Sieg Heil, and then go sit down for dinner, you'd be like, oh my God, you know, Timmy is a Nazi. This is bad. But they come back as either Islamist, communist. And listen, there's a, like I have a chant that I got him at U of T, and they, this isn't even the worst one globally, but it was pretty funny. I was thinking to myself, like, they're gonna do this because they were doing the all the Zionists are racist, all the Zionists are the terrorists. So all they just chanted Zionists, all Zionists are racist, all Zionists are terrorists. And then the very next thing they go is Mimaya, Amaya, Fastin, Arabia, which is basically from the water to the water, Palestine is Arab, which is the original from the river to the sea. Like, where does from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free? It actually comes from the Arabic chant. The Arabic version of that chant is not from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. It's from the water to the water, Palestine will be Arab. But you understand, that's what you chant in Arabic, because most of the Arabs are either outright Islamists or ethno-nationalists. They're either pan-Arab nationalists or they're, you know, they either want a pan-Arab ethno-state or a caliphate. So Palestine will be free. This isn't about freedom for Palestine. This is about Arab supremacy in Palestine. So that's what they chant in Arab. And then in English, they chant from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, for all the communists and Westerners to think they're a part of the right side. But, you know, they chant, there's only one solution, Antifada revolution. And Holocaust imagery there is pretty amazing. So for Indians who aren't really familiar, the big thing with the Holocaust is like, the anti-Semitic thing is like, what was the answer to the Jewish question? What do we do about the Jews? Then there was the final solution by Eichmann and Hitler, which was they set up the blueprint for the Holocaust, the final solution. Yeah. So when you chant at the Jews, there is only one solution. There's some Holocaust imagery there too. And then you go Antifada revolution. So it's pretty clear that this isn't a peaceful Antifada. Like, and there was no peaceful Antifada. Like, the Antifadas were a wave of terrorist attacks in the 80s and then the early 2000s against Israel. Thousands of people died. And suicide bombing, shootings, stabbings, yeah, you name it. So this is what we have here in the West. And eventually when, you know, we've been saying for years, like, the globalize the Antifada trend isn't good, but eventually someone's going to globalize the Antifada, strap a bomb or place a bomb somewhere in a synagogue and a thing and be like, you know, they're being told that armed resistance is justified by any means necessary. They're in groups and Antifada, Antifada, Antifada. And now they have these little encampments, which are, they're terrorist training camps. All these encampments are incredibly significant national security threats. All of them. The Muslim Brotherhood infiltrated. They're well-funded and they're sort of secluded from any law enforcement. You saw at UCLA, like they had self-defense training where people had self-defense training. Everyone's masked up. How long before people go self-defense training? They get a few altercations with the cops, they get all riled up, and how long until a few of them decide to become an actual terrorist cell?
So this was such a scary video. It was, the source was ABC, I think. And what the hell?
Yeah, this is them taking over Hamilton Hall in Columbia. This is
what is wrong with these people?
They think they're on the right side of history, and they don't know history or ethics.
What the hell? These are all white kids.
Yeah.
What is wrong with white people? I'm pretty sure these are not Muslims, Daniel. These are all white, pretty much atheists. You know that, Daniel. Both you and I know. Yeah. Most of these kids are atheists.
Yeah, the communist contingent is higher than the Islamist contingent. The Islamists are more vocal, and I think and get into leadership positions more here because they can do as a Palestinian, right? They can do that, and they have more connections to the funding. But yeah, you're right. A lot of this is white kids looking for adventure, right? It's upper middle class white kids at an Ivy League university, and this is their only chance in life to join the revolution, to feel like they're on the side of something, to fight against the man, you know. And you can understand, like, the pull of Antifada is intoxicating, right? Think of it. Everyone's there. Like, there's a lot of women are in this, so it's a great place to pick up girls. A bunch of, you know, girls are just attracted to the thing. So you understand how young men work. You wrap something around your head. You get more violent. You're like, I pushed a cop. Like, oh, hardcore, right? Because, one of the ways to get females is for the male to, you know, show some sort of social dominance. And you can do that in a regular society by being like, I got a job as a doctor. Oh, wow, that brings status. I am a professional athlete. Well, that brings status. But then also these things break down into group. Like, you can become more attractive to women by gaining status within particular groups. And inside a revolution, right, if there's people inside a revolution, one ways men can gain status towards women is by being more violent and more antagonistic. You know, look, these are jihadi mating grounds. You can see, like, you see a bunch of, you know, kafia wearing men with in full terrorist regalia, like, going and assaulting Jews, like, and then you have the women there listen, you go into kafia, you go punch a Jew, you go back, yeah, I got a Zionist. Oh, Amir got a Zionist. Whoa, wow. Probably got laid that night. And this is what's probably going on. These things is, like, you know, the youth are attractive. No one really knows. Like, I mean, you've seen enough videos of people interviewing, like, why are you here? Oh, I don't know why we're here. Talk to the marshals. And this is what they do. They teach the kids not to respond to anything. Just chant. Don't interact with the outside world, because the second you interact with the inside world, people will realize how ridiculous you are. Right. The second one of these white students got up and made demands, the 34-year-old poetry PhD, the Marxist poetry PhD major, she got up in Colombia and she's like, we're just asking for basic humanitarian aid. And then they're like, has anyone blocked the food from getting to you? No, I'm not sure. I don't know. But we're talking about basic humanitarian aid at an Ivy League campus. And then it was turned into a meme. And this is what the students are. It's like, they want to enact a little Gaza. They want to pretend that they want to enact a little bit of suffering. Like, oh yeah, we're revolutionaries. Like, I'm sorry. If you're revolutionaries, have the balls to suffer a little bit for what you believe. I have friends who got out of Iranian. I have a friend who got out of an Iranian prison on a dry hunger strike. He was willing to die to attain freedom, and wrote a pretty badass letter to the head of the judiciary in Iran, and like. He, the way he got off is he basically said, you know, they gave him a request because he had some fame and he's doing a high press. They didn't want to deal with the press. So they allowed him to write a letter, asked him what he wanted. Like, oh, do you want a TV? Do you want this? So he said, I want to write a letter to the justice minister. And like, okay. And he basically wrote him like, dear sir, he's like, you're a Muslim. I'm a Muslim. So let's just respect Islam. And I humbly request that when I die, you give my body to my family for a proper Islamic burial. And set that in. And they went, oh, damn. All right. We can't. Like, just don't want to deal with this, because he was willing to die in a way for freedom in Iran. So they let him go because they didn't want him to do that. But like, these kids aren't willing to sacrifice anything. Like, go to jail. Like, this is catch and release. Like, oh, we're hungry, we're starving. You started the revolution. Like, you have to feed your own revolution. That's on you. Like, it's not my job. Like, you can't just like they're so insane. They're Palestinians. They're literally Palestinians. They take over something that isn't theirs, declare it's their rightful property, and then attack the other side and then demand humanitarian aid. We've recreated Palestine in a nutshell, all over college campuses. And just like the real Palestine, this doesn't end well. Like, this doesn't end well. This ends when people, like, it doesn't end, I'm not sure, but like, eventually you're going to find out that some legitimate, like, eventually over the next few months, there's going to be actual terrorist attacks, and it's going to be traced back to these encampments where, you know, these people met and radicalized and learned theory and read the PFLP's writings and Hamas writings. Like, again, you see flags of Hamas, Hezbollah, PFLP, Hamas, people in Hamas headbands. Like, and again, Hamas is a Muslim Brotherhood. Hamas is a militant wing of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood is funding these encampments. Students for Justice in Palestine, American Muslims for Palestine, their Muslim Brotherhood affiliates. All the Muslim Brotherhood affiliates are funding and in some way involved in this. So, you know, don't delude yourselves into thinking these are just a bunch of peaceful students. Like, no, there's hardcore activists, and they're using this as recruitment and training grounds. And we're gonna start to feel the violent consequences of this in over the next year.
So what do you make of this video of UCLA where the cops basically pretty much moved in on a pro-Palestinian encampment?
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
Gina,
this is so dangerous. Again, they're shooting rubber bullets, but I can tell you from doing stories about rubber bullets, they are extremely painful. If they hit your leg, your arm, they could break your arm. But they're trying to get into this encampment to get everyone arrested and out of this encampment.
So a lot of students have been arrested. Now, why I played this clip is because if this would have happened in India, there would have been 500 reports written on democracy backsliding in India.
Yeah.
It did not take them more than a month to do it in America. I know it's not going to happen in Canada, Daniel. You don't have to even give me an answer because India and Canada have, you know, same parasitic patterns. The Indian government, even the BJP government, gives too much leeway. You know, one day when you have your spare time, just Google Shaheen Bagh, New Delhi.
Okay.
They took over the entire road. They just blocked the entire road in an area.
Yeah. So listen, I understand the Indian side of this is like, yeah, they would call this just backfire democracy. Yeah. Yeah. Listen, I'm infamous for calling out the double standards of viewing India, right? I liberate Kashmir, free Kashmir from Pakistan. Like, okay, I'm on, I get it. But it's important to point out, this isn't democratic backsliding. Like, you have to get rid of these things. Like, the encampment themselves is anti-democratic. Like, oh, people are shooting rubber bullets at the students. Good. That's what they deserve. These UCLA students, they had attacked this. They had been going around with tasers. They had, part of the mob had tasered a Jewish man the day earlier. There was just a Jewish girl who was beaten so bad by five men on the ground with keffiyehs. She's on the ground beaten by men keffiyehs. They had to get medical attention. She was sent to the hospital. That started a riot between the two sides. The two sides were rioting for hours, and the police weren't doing anything because they just let this thing go on. Okay, but even before that, what was the UCLA encampment? The UCLA encampment where these students had seized part of the buildings, and they were denying access to the Jewish students who didn't agree with them and blockading parts of campuses. The library, during the end of a school year, was taken over by the extremists, main library. And you saw the videos, people saying, like, can I go to the library? They're like, are you a Zionist? He's like, yes. Well, no, you can't go in. You pay tuition to UCLA, and the Hitler Youth are forming blockades and checkpoints to assess for ideological purity to keep out the Zionists. And you can't have this, right? I'm a freedom guy. Like, most Canadians, you know, especially, like, believe that you have to be nice to everyone. Like, you have to be nice to everyone. You can't be white supremacist. You can't, like, listen, I think you're allowed to be racist towards black people. You can feel racist thoughts towards black people. You can say racist things towards black people. I don't, but I think you should be allowed to. That makes me a bit different than Canadians. What you cannot do is you cannot take parts of public land or anything and start putting up checkpoints and saying, well, no black people unless they say that Thomas Sowell is right about everything, right? If you like, if any black people who disagree with Thomas Sowell or the type of black people I don't like, well, they can't come into this restaurant and they can't come into this library. No. That's illegal. I cannot do that. The police should come and remove me because this is a free country where people have freedom of movement and freedom of association. You don't want to associate with Jews? Fine. You don't get to take public land, create an encampment and say no Jews allowed in this encampment. Like, you don't get to do that. I'm sorry. And they were getting violent. They were consistent. Like, all these things are violent. A Jew was attacked yesterday at U of T. Like, these people see Jews with Israeli flags or with Canadian flags, with anything that symbolizes they're Zionist or they're not on the side of the Palestinians, and they attack. And that's assault. You cannot do that. It's against the law. I can't just say, oh, this Kushel, I don't like his opinions. I think, he's votes for, he cheers for the wrong crit team. I'm going to punch him. Assault. Can't do that. Even if I punch him for Palestine, can't do it. But again, there's law and order's broken down in our countries, and there's consequences to that.
Now let's go to some more interesting stuff. So the CBC reported.
Oh, God.
There is an update in the Hardeep Singh Nijjar case. We have to talk about it. So police has finally made arrests in the killing of BC Sikh. I'm not going to call him an activist. He is a terrorist.
Let's just say he is described by his own followers at his gurdwara as the leader of the Khalistan Tiger Force. So
we'll just say Khalistan Tiger Force leader. Hardip Singh Najjar.
Yeah, so this guy, they have made three arrests. By the way, one of them, this dude,
yeah,
has been openly making Khalistani statements and all these kinds of things on social media. His posts were out and all these things. Yeah. So the three in suspects are Kamalpreet Singh, Karan Preet Singh, and Karan Brar, who face first-degree murder and conspiracy charges in the Nijjar case. According to the documents filed in a Surrey court Friday, the charges have not been tested in court, but they all appeared before a judge virtually on Friday. And what do you make of this now? What happened to the Indian government? Well, and if the Indian government was hiring these people, why are they there? The Indian government would have taken them out.
Yeah, I mean, it's come back to, I mean, this is kind of where we're at for square one. Like, okay, kids, if you're going to be the Prime Minister of Canada or a country like Canada or a country, general rule, maybe a bit of a 202, don't start an international issue over a dead terrorist with gang connections. It's fundamentally a bad idea. Now, we've known this from the beginning, right? We knew that, like, again, from all the evidence coming out, we it looked more and more like, okay, it's probably a Khalistani inter-gang squad hit. So let's steel man the Canadian position to the maximum. Like, what's the best case scenario? Okay, let's say the Indian government did direct the assassination of Nijjar. Let's say, for argument's sake, it did. Okay. How did Hardip Singh Najjar get into the country? He wasn't allowed in the country. He got on fake documents and then somehow became a citizen allowed to stay with fake documents on his third attempt to get in. Okay, that doesn't look good. He also ran a terrorist training camp. That doesn't look good. The people who killed him, oh, they're here on student visas, but they're not students. They kind of stuck into the country. And how are they still here? How are they still here? They're not Canadians either. So this goes back, and any time a Canadian looks at it, if you're going to give a serious look at it, you have to go, what the hell's going on? Like, what the hell's going on in their country? And a lot of people are looking at it. Now, the problem is you have the media, you know, CBC will go, Indian government alleged assassination of Canadian citizen. If you just do the headline, then it sends bad for India, right? The headline in the CBC can be like, oh, Indian government assassinates Canadian Sikh activist. And like, that headline's bad, and I get it. But once you break down what actually happened in the case, like, it's what, like, again, the CBC isn't a global propaganda outlet, and you can't just convince like Americans and the EU and India, especially with a CBC article that like, look, Trudeau good, India bad, says CBC. You can't just take that to the International Criminal Court and then be like, okay, sure. Like, the politics is involved in other countries. Like, India has geopolitical weight. Like, India has influence, right? And again, like, we share allies. So when you go to America and say, oh, they killed Hardip Singh Najjar, India can go to America and be like, yeah, he's a terrorist. And like, look at the gang connections here. Like, this isn't clean. Like, in order to get like a, if you really want to get a guilty verdict on another country, why we choose our allies in Pakistan when they killed? This is a problem of Khalistani infiltration to the government, which has been my position. But India has friends too. India can go to the same people you're going to and be like, look, he was killed by Sikh gang members who are Khalistani. This is just inter-Khalistani violence. Like, a lot of these people in Canada die. Now, I think we probably agree on this, that like, there's Khalistani gang violence in Canada because of a broken immigration system, a broken legal system, and general lawlessness in Canada. And these Khalistanis tend to kill each other. Are some of the killings of Khalistanis, are they maybe influenced by the Indian government? Maybe. Probably some of them. But I still think the majority of Khalistanis killing Khalistanis is inter-gang violence. So we're basically the claim, did the Indian government interfere in one
it's
of
like
them?
And this, be like, right? Yeah, so let's say some gangster says, you know, I'm going to kill this guy, and Indian government wants them dead anyways. Why would the Indian government work to stop that person? They have no reason. They're like, both of you die.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so like, any way you look at it, like, we have to say, like, okay, if we want to do a serious, like, the problem is, there's, if you give a serious investigation to what happened to Hardip Singh Najjar, it's worse for Canada than it is for India. Like, there's, like, the smallest problem Canada has, let's say I've been blessed by
some being of omniscience right now. Boom. Okay, I know it. Like, I can tell you definitively that Indian government was behind the assassination of Hatip Singh Najjar. Okay, even if that's true, this still isn't good for Canada. Like, this is still messy. Like, even if you could prove it, you still have to prove that, okay, the Indian government got involved in these Khalistani gang wars. Okay, what are these Khalistani gang wars? How are these Khalistanis in the country? Like, that's Trudeau's thing. Like, who got these people into the country? All roads lead back to Trudeau, right, with this. Because, like, how do these students get in? Like,
the immigration system. Recently, all the political outfits of Canada were there in a open Sikh rally where Khalistani slogans were announced, and all Canadian politicians were there. And this is exactly the problem. What are we going to do when this kind of behavior is going to be allowed inside Canada? And how many times have I told you privately when we've gone out that Canada is going to pay miserably for this? They're going to pay miserably for this.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think your predictions on this. We have this problem where we try and keep our head in the sand as long as humanly possible. Again, like, go back to UCLA. They tried to ignore it and just allowed the rioting and the violence to just get outside because they didn't want to do anything. You know, LA didn't want to do anything. The university didn't do anything. Gavin Newsom didn't want to do anything. So you just had this sort of deferred responsibility until an actual outright riot broke out. And then you had to come in and fix it. So this is our mentality of just let things fester and get worse and hope they
don't. And I don't know if you read this article. I'll send it to you over WhatsApp too. This is by a very serious veteran journalist of India, Shishir Gupta. And this is a mainstream Indian publication. Shishir covers the foreign policy line. And basically, he has written this just on the 2nd of May. Daniel, where he says the Five Eyes intelligence has decided to take on Indian intelligence for getting too big for its boots and are leaking source intelligence to leftist media. And the most worrying bit in this piece was that they have decided to interfere in our elections. They are trying to interfere in Indian elections. And listen, if this was any other journalist who would have written this, I would just say, who gives a shit? This is coming from a journalist that is actually respected even outside India. Shishir is a really respected journalist. Yes, he has connections inside the government, which journalist doesn't? You know, that's how journalism happens. They have sources. Now, this is a worrying sign. I don't know why the Western intelligence paraphernalia is so interested in a weak India, because from a foreign policy perspective, a strong India, because India is a natural ally. We are all democracies here. India is such a natural ally for these people that, like, it's so stupid for them to even think of working against this. I don't understand it. It's stupid. It makes no sense. I mean, I would recommend everybody to go and Google this article. It's written by Shishir Gupta on the 2nd of May, which says how Five Eyes block is trying to defang India's counter-terror and intel apparatus. It's a very interesting read. You should go and read it. It is critical of the Indian government in some places too, which is what a fair journalist does. And Shishir is a fair journalist. And my whole worry is that where Indo-Canadian relations have been destroyed by Justin Trudeau, he's going to destroy everything basically before he goes. And I don't know what is the future of Canada from there. I mean, I don't know how Pierre Poilievre salvages it. But before we go, I want to ask you another question. What the hell was this Muppet saying here? Like, what is he saying here? This guy, and what's with this woman in the background, Chrystia Freeland?
Chrystia Freeland, yeah.
Decision to ask the wealthiest, often of older generations, whose money works for them instead of necessarily them working as hard as these young people are for their money, for their salaries. We've raised the capital gain inclusion rate to make sure that the people who've done the best over the past years in a society and an economy that is tilted slightly towards them actually gets retilted a bit more towards the young people we need to continue to grow our economy long into the future.
So basically they'll take old people's money away and then they'll tell old people, listen, you're poor anyways, and we have euthanasia so you can die.
Yep. Literally. I mean, this is full, we're on full on communist Canada. Like, it's just horrifying to listen to that. I mean, one, none of it is economically accurate. Okay. This man doesn't understand how the economy works. This is literal true to life. Do you remember we grow the economy from the heart outwards? That was 2015 Trudeau. And then the budget will balance itself. So this is the economic genius we're listening to right now. And Christopher Freeland with the faces. I mean, people like to make jokes. I mean, we remember World War II, the Nazis pioneered amphetamine-based warfare. And her grandfather was a card-carrying Nazi. So people like to draw those things.
There's cocaine Mitch and there is cocaine Christia.
Cocaine Christia. Cocaine. With the way the economy is going right now, I wouldn't be surprised if it was fentanyl lace crack. But to each their own. That's going to be our national export these days, fentanyl. It's Marxist. It's evil. It's pitting people against each other. It's demonizing the senior citizens in Canada and the older generations who've worked hard for their money and like demonizing the concept. Oh, you worked hard for your money. You worked your entire life and made some investments, bought some land, bought some property. Well, that now belongs to the youth because like evil. Evil, evil, evil. And old generations have money and they often give it to their kids and the next generation. And that's how like they give it to the youth. But no, we're going to take more of your family's money and give it to the government so we can distribute it to the youth. And like, no, that money's not going to the youth. That money's going to friggin' Hezbollah. Like, that's where that money's going. Like, we're now giving $65 million to Hezbollah for economic development. Like,
It's immoral.
Deport the prime minister. Is there a way to deport the prime minister? I know we're having trouble deporting the terrorists, but I'm just musing. If anyone can, is there any way to deport the sitting prime minister of a country? Can a lawyer get on this and get back to me? Because like that's kind of what we need right now.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to ask you a few questions now from the viewers. Somebody has said the protests are so anti-Semitic. At the same time, so many students don't know what they're protesting about. How can there be consequences that these protests are prevented?
It's about will. Like, it's about will to enforce consequences. So you saw the universities that came out and said, if you go and protest, we're going to expel you and then, like, shut it down. Like, the universities that, like, said, no, not on my campus. And as soon as students went onto the campus, they're like, no, moving them. Consequences, suspended. It ended. Because these kids don't know what they're doing and they're not willing to face the consequences. So, but what's happening is that there are some hardcores that are, you know, pushing for there to be no consequences. The only way this stopped, listen, this is the Antifada. This is an Antifada. As a Jew, I will tell you, Antifadas do not stop until you stop them. Why are there so many checkpoints and why is there a wall in Israel? No walls from Mexico to Jerusalem. The reason there is a wall in Israel on security checkpoints is because of the second Intifada. Palestinians used to have more freedom of movement until they decided to reclaim Al-Aqsa, which is under their control anyway. They needed a wave of suicide bombings and violence. So they took their children, they sent them into pizza restaurants, strapped bombs in them and made them go boom for years. And finally, the Israelis who had to push this created the walls and the checkpoint system and screened everyone coming from Gaza and the West Bank into Israel to make sure they didn't have bombs or guns on them. That's how they stopped the Intifada. And that's why the walls and checkpoints are there. Same way, these student Intifada encampments, they are not going to stop until you stop them. You need to come in as the police, take all these tents, confiscate them, throw them out, charge the non-students with criminal trespassing, and then suspend the students and say, okay, this entire year, or expel them. Like this entire year, we're expelling the leaders and we're suspending all the students involved. There you go. There's consequences. Done. And if they come back, you grab them and you arrest them again. And then, like, that's the only way this stops. But no one has the will to do that.
So somebody, they must have seen the image of that stated the Jews should go back to Europe. But like, what if somebody said all Muslims should go back to their home countries? How would any university campus allow that?
No. And eventually,
But why isn't Jews go back to Europe or Poland racist? And why is that allowed? I mean, I say it should be allowed under free speech, to be very honest. But then what would happen when the other side does?
Listen, I don't think it's criminal. If you say, like, listen, there's people who say it's hate speech. If you say Jews go back to Europe, it's hate speech and they should be arrested. I'm like, no. I don't believe in hate speech. Listen, I believe in incitement laws. I believe chanting for Antifada is criminal incitement, right? I think that's an actual criminal incitement to genocide. Like, that's on the books. But you want to say Jews go back to Europe? Fine, it's racist. What should happen in a functioning society, in a anti-racist society, is when you say Jews go back to Europe, the media should turn against you and be like, what's happening here? And then there should be some social consequences to that. But there's no consequences because they're white, radical leftist communists. And anything that has a leftist tint to it is allowed, and anything that has a right-wing tint to it is not allowed. And that's the rules. So, vis-a-vis the convoy, a peaceful protest that the media tried to turn into a violent protest, versus the student encampments, which is a violent protest the media is trying to portray as peaceful.
But then, listen, demographic changes are a way of life. Open societies will always have a consistently changing demography, whether we like it or not. Whether it's India, whether it's Canada, whether it's America, whether it's the United Kingdom, we are open societies. Demographies change. People come into our countries. Yeah, people think Indians don't have immigration. We have a lot of immigration from our neighborhood. A lot of people come in India. A lot of Bangladeshis come in India to make money in India. And these are eventually realities of life. But immigrants come in with certain value systems. What is the way a society tells its immigrants? Listen, I stay in Canada for 4 to 5 months. If I am carrying bad values in Canada, and yes, morality is objective. There are bad values, there are good values. I should not be allowed in Canada. I am saying this.
Yeah.
Who else cares? Why can't countries say this?
The only people saying this with any clarity are immigrants who understand this. Like, the only people who understand this is the immigrants who waited in line, filled out the paperwork, and made the conscious decision to be like, yes, I choose Canada because X, Y, and Z. Like, everyone else has their head up their ass. And no, like, I'm not against immigration. I'm against mass migration. Like, I think these targets we have are like, we need to grow our population to 50 million. No, that's insane. Right? I'm in favor of taking in an amount of immigrants we can comfortably integrate into our society. Like, that's the best for us. That's the best for them. No one would bat an eye at anyone saying this in 1996, standard liberal or Democrat or everyone policy. But now, you know, it's either you want everyone to immigrate to the country or you want no one to immigrate to the country, right? It's all or nothing now. And it's a function of us going to the sort of all in approach. And, you know, I mean, if you ever saw the movie, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, there's a Greek dad. And one of the jokes is he thinks Windex cures everything. He loves Windex. So he's like soaking his elbow in Windex because it has a bit of a rash on it. This is Justin Trudeau with immigration. This is the liberals. Immigration is a net good. So for 10 years, they'd be like, oh, there's problems with this or this or this. Like, well, that's why we've increased immigration. Because immigration is good to increase. Like, they just artificially increased the GDP. And we know what they're doing. And then pretended that it was solving all the problems. When, like, immigration isn't good. It isn't bad. It's a function of economics. And the right amount of immigration is good. And the wrong amount of immigration is bad. But we could never have that conversation because they just use the, are you against immigrants? You're anti-immigrant? You're far right, blah, 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 blah. So it just became like a sort of social point to be like radical pro-immigration, mass migration to prove how anti-racist you were. And like the mental breakdown of Canadian society was rapid and had quite a high velocity, let's say.
Yeah, as far as immigration is concerned, we can explain this with a very tangible example of the Greater Toronto Region, where rental rates have hit the roof, real estate has hit the roof, and mind-numbingly idiotic policies of letting all sorts of people in on student visas without looking at housing availability. And the problem is not the decision to take the students in. Okay, students come in because literally the North American university system relies on international students. And if they stop international students, especially from India, the entire university edifice will collapse. Now, you would say, I'm happy. I want the university to collapse. But I'm just thinking from their point of view.
Right.
But the solution to this was actually a very mature one given by the conservative leader, Pierre Poilievre, where he said, the problem is artificially created. Every time the liberals come to power, real estate permits and the speed at which real estate permits are given is reduced by a monumental degree. And when you reduce that, it's a supply and demand issue. There is no new
real estate coming in the market in the greater Toronto region, because they don't, they just don't pass, right? They don't pass the, they don't give these permits. So actually Pierre was right. I was like, if I would come in power, the first thing I would do is actually start giving these permits to these people. They can build new houses and automatically all these things will be sorted out and you can handle these people.
Yeah.
Nobody's happy. The new immigrant is not happy and the old immigrants are not happy. So who's happy here? Nobody's happy.
Well, there are certain people within the Liberal Party that are making significant money individually off the immigration system. If you want a fun fact, the going rate to bribe the Liberal government to get a Khalistani gang member into Canada is $10,000. So $10,000 bribe gets a Khalistani gang member into Toronto. And where does this money go?
Everybody
knows. I know who. I know where you are. And he's no longer in the Liberal government, but he's still part of the Khalistani cadre. But yes.
This is a real question. I know this person individually. I'm not going to share his name, but he's a Sikh. I've met him. He is a decent human being, not a Khalistani. And he's asking, I'm visiting Toronto for Memorial Day long weekend. Any suggestions for places to visit or avoid? That's the key question. Or avoid. Avoid Brampton, man.
Oh, Canada.
So what do we do? What do we tell him? Where should he go on Memorial Day?
He's looking for like a nice Canadian, maybe down to like the lakeshore, like down to the Queen.
Yeah, that's
Queen
pretty good. Yeah, that's pretty good, man. Even the drive, you know, you go on the highway and you're just cutting across lakeshore. That's a pretty good drive.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not a bad place to be. Go catch a Blue Jay Gate, maybe.
Yeah. And if you really want to have fun, you can go to Brampton. You can go there and feel the wrath of Khalistanis, but it's all right. Dan, I've taken enough of your time, but before we go, I want you to have the last word. So anything else you wanted to speak or cover?
I think we did a good job of sort of covering it all. I mean, if there's one, of course, thanks for having me on. It's great to be here. And maybe warning for the Indian audience, I would say from my perspective on India, this, I totally get your perspective that had you been doing this, the world would be yelling at you that, oh, evil, blah, 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 democracy backsliding. If I were you, I would drop this narrative, because eventually this is going to happen there, right? This is going to spread. The students are going to go crazy. They're going to do this for Kashmir. Like, they're already planning it to do for Palestine. If they hate Israel, they hate India. Like, the students and the lefties, they're coming for the West. They're going to come for you too. I would avoid the narrative of, oh, if we do it, because you're kind of building that, because you're going to eventually have to do this. And then when they do it, the narrative is going to be that. Instead, I would use this time to properly frame the narrative of, you need to take you should probably start framing the narrative and building up already that it is good practice and pro-democracy to remove communists and Islamist radicals who are occupying spaces from those spaces, because that will help set a deterrent and for when it happens to you. Because it's fun to just go, ha 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 ha, look what's happening there in America. But eventually America's bullshit becomes your bullshit, because that's how the world works. So I would say start setting the narrative that you're going to need to utilize in a few years, instead of just, you know, being pointing and laughing in America. It would be my two cents there, because you know I got your back. I got all 1 billion of you.
And you know, just I wanted to end the podcast just by playing this small clip of this murderer, alleged murderer. This is Karan Brar, and he was literally promoting an immigration company in 2019. So he speaks in Punjabi here. So basically he was promoting a company. Obviously the company name was beeped out. But the point is, all you were saying in Punjabi was that I got my student visa, I'm coming to Canada. But think about it. How little time did this man take? This is the problem with the Canadian immigration system. This man goes from India. He's clearly, he must have had gang links in India. But that's how easy and stupid the Canadian system is, ladies and gentlemen. Take a student visa. You go to Canada. You do gang warfare there under the garb of studying. And that's all. Or there could be the alternative version that this guy was a normal kid, but he goes to Canada, starts going to Gurdwaras, gets radicalized over there. Again, it's a Canadian problem. It has nothing to do with India. It in both scenarios, it's a Canadian problem.
Yep.
So we'll end today's podcast over here. Dan, as always, pleasure talking to you, bud. I'm going to meet you next month, very soon, in a few weeks. I'll give you a call when I land in Canada. I'll be there in a few weeks. So we'll catch up over there over dinner. But everybody, Daniel's social media handle is there in the description of the podcast. So go. It doesn't matter if you're watching this on YouTube or listening to the audio version on Spotify, iTunes, or whatever your preferred platform is. Go follow Daniel on Twitter, because Canada does not like Facebook and they've shut basically all the other things down. So that's the only thing left. Twitter is only
the only thing left. We have listed in the news. It's the Alamo of Canadian news.
Yeah. So go follow Daniel on social media. And as far as I'm concerned, you guys know the drill. You can like this video, subscribe to the channel. If you want to leave a comment in the comment section, go ahead, leave a comment. Share your thoughts about this mess that exists in American universities and North American universities right now. If you want to buy my book, as you guys know, my book is out. You can buy my book too. And I'll see you guys next time. Until then, namaste. Take care. Bye-bye.